past several decades now, downtown Winnipeg has struggled to remake itself. The downtown core suffers from perceptions of not being safe. While there's a moderate burst of development activity in some areas of downtown, stretches of central real estate remain shuttered or underused. Most recently, a plan to turn downtown into a sports, hospitality, and entertainment district, or SHED, has generated controversy for its apparent disregard of residents who actually live in the area. Joining us to talk about development plans for Winnipeg's downtown and the realities and perceptions of safety in the area is Robert Gulston, a local writer whose website Rise and Sprawl has been covering Winnipeg urban planning issues for several years. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks for having me.
In a recent article you wrote for the Spectator Tribune, you compared how police in the 1970s used to conduct walking beat patrols of the area, and there's been a greater reliance recently on squad cars patrolling downtown. What has this shift meant for safety in downtown Winnipeg?
Well, it kind of indicates a different approach to crime prevention and safety, and really, a move away from police and other kind of authorities, like being part of the community in a way. I mean, I'm not saying officers in the old days were wonderful all the time or anything like that, but I mean, certainly they were a visible part of the street and the neighborhood, as opposed to now they show up when there's a call, you know, when there's a problem or something like that. And so we've kind of moved away from, you know, kind of a regular presence of police on the street, you know, to talk with people when there's an incident and when there's not an incident, you know, you just talk about, you know, common going on things. Yeah, so.
And the shift towards police cars as the main mode of patrolling, it's related to a shift to a more car-centric culture overall in downtown Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's the same kind of thinking that came, after the Second World War, especially, that just cars were turned into these, you know, more powerful, dependable machines by that point. And the assumption was in the 40s and the 50s that we just wouldn't need to walk anywhere anymore, and that we would all have this car and there would be no traffic problems. There would be no, pollution problems as a result. And, you know, everyone would just drive in to work and leave. And the same approach to policing, you can just do everything by car. And over time, we forgot about the importance of actually having, you know, face-to-face human contact, walking around, experiencing things, you know, with our senses. And so a lot of planning, both with, you know, crime prevention now and just the way we build buildings and the way we lay out streets, continues to function under that premise that everyone's just going to drive everywhere, even though more and more people, you know, and a lot of individuals are moving away from that more and more. But a lot of the policies we still have, you know, still follow this kind of car-centric approach.
And one of the most visible aspects of that, and you can even see it from satellite photos of downtown Winnipeg, just the vast expanses of surface parking lots that we have. And that's been an issue politically here in Winnipeg. What strategies can we take to start cutting down the number of surface parking lots that we have here?
Right now, there, like, the city of Winnipeg does recently put in a, you know, kind of a ban, essentially, of the creation of new ones. So that's a good start. But the reality is there's a lot of them that still live on and, you know, are able to continue, existing. And so to deal with the existing supply or oversupply of surface parking lot is going to take a little bit more, a little bit more political will than what currently exists. It's interesting because a lot of these, many parking lots of the large, you know, the large surface parking lots you see, you know, south of Portage Avenue, north of Portage Avenue, are privately owned. You know, just someone had a building years ago, they took down the building, they operate a parking lot or something. But many of them are owned by either the city of Winnipeg or the province of Manitoba. And so that's interesting to me that, the city and the provincial government will, you know, publicly say, isn't this a bad thing? We need to do something about this. And a lot of these parking lots are actually owned by them. So there is that opportunity for them to, you know, say, put it on, you know, sell it to a willing developer who's willing to build, you know, apartments or, you know, condos or whatever. So that's an opportunity that, you know, it doesn't seem to be acted upon too strongly right now.
Interesting. And is there a danger, though, that if we don't have the right planning tools in place, that we could, even if we're replacing downtown buildings, downtown parking lots with buildings, that we could end up with buildings that are equally unpedestrian friendly?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think that that's something that I mentioned in an article that's also on the Spectator Tribune. I don't think it's the one you were citing earlier, but there is that danger, and that's in just anything we'll do if it's not a surface parking lot. And it's a good thing that more and more people are coming around to the you know, the detrimental effects of surface parking downtown, but there's also detrimental effects to the kind of building, the kinds, you know, depending on what kind of building you build, it could also have a detrimental effect, make you feel unsafe, make you feel unwelcomed, and just simply not want to show up and go downtown because there's no reason to and it feels unsafe and things. An example of that would be the Winnipeg Convention Center. It's not a surface parking lot, but it's a terrible building from a pedestrian's perspective because it's basically a fortress, and there's other examples of, you know, some office buildings and things like that downtown that just because they're not a surface parking lot doesn't mean it doesn't have the same negative effects. So
now the ideal, I think, for most people that have thought about urban planning in Winnipeg and other cities in North America is it'd be great to have vibrant communities of people actually living downtown and people shopping and all kinds of bustling activity going on. I think at all levels of government and city planning, there's a sort of at least a theoretical recognition that that would be a good way to go. But it's a bit of a chicken and egg problem, isn't it? Because you want to, you know, in order to get people living downtown, you have to have shops downtown and you have to get rid of the parking downtown. It's one thing after another. Where do you break that cycle?
Well, you're right. I mean, it is kind of a challenge. You can't just plop down a building that, you know, has shops on the ground floor and, you know, apartments and, you know, a mix of housing types and things like that. You can't just plop that down and say, well, there you go. Now, you know, now start to be a neighborhood. Cause to open up a small business, if people aren't going to come to this street that I open up on, then I'm not, you know, and if the rent's too expensive cause it's a new building. So there's all kinds of, you know, unintended consequences and all kinds of different things that, you know, are that can occur. But I guess a good place to start is start small. Don't have any, like, rather than we're going to take 6 square blocks of, you know, parking lots and things like that, and we're just going to transform it within 5 or 10 years or something like that. So actually maybe start very small keep what... There's a usefulness in old buildings, not just for their heritage value or their aesthetic quality, but also their ability to attract a smaller business that might be that just can't afford rents in a large brand new building. So from a practical perspective, you know, some of the existing older buildings, they might not be the most attractive things, have a role to play because they're relatively cheap for a new business that it wants to open up.
Now, recently there's been a strategy from the city's main downtown development agency, Center Venture, and they seem to be increasingly relying on getting rid of some of the locations that they see as problematic, like cheaper bars and hotels and even government-run liquor stores. In one case, there was a suggestion. Is this strategy ultimately counterproductive because it may remove some of the more vibrant and active businesses in the neighborhood?
I think so, and it's interesting how, you know, if you compare downtown today with downtown of 15 years ago or 30 years ago, or more specifically the North Main stretch, you know, between Higgins and City Hall or Portage Avenue. And you compare the number of, you know, old kind of seedy hotels with the bars and things that are, you know, frequently identified as a sources of troubles and, you know, sources of downtown safety issues. There's much less of them today. There's half as many of these hotels on Main Street than there were 15 years ago. But I don't think anyone would say that the problem has decreased by half, you know, of the perception of safety or the reality of safety issues and things. So I think just doing away with, you know, doing away with those bars or, you know, the liquor stores and things like that, I don't think that addresses the problem. You know, the problem of, you know, you think about the problem of the, of people drinking in public, you know, during the day on Portage Avenue. That's a very large, very complex problem. You can't just, well, if we take away their, you know, if we take away the vendor down the street, then that that problem will disappear somehow. I don't think it works. And also things like a liquor store and a beer vendor, you know, say the beer vendor at the Woodbine Hotel or something, if you actually are living downtown and spending time there, then you may actually, I mean, unless you're not a, unless you're a teetotaler or something, you may, you know, that's a useful thing. It's nice to have, to live in a neighborhood that has a liquor store if you want a glass of, you know, a glass of wine with your dinner or something. So to take away the liquor store that is basically there for, you know, downtown residents, you know, doesn't really move towards having a more livable, walkable downtown.
And in a recent interview with CBC, Center Venture CEO Ross McGowan compared people who get drunk downtown to children who shouldn't be allowed to play in the living room and should be sent down to the basement. Is there a social class bias to how we're dealing with this problem?
Oh, I think so. It's really plain because of what Center Venture and other groups are, you know, trying to remove, which is, you know, kind of these, you know, rougher old hotels and their bars and things like that, which, you know, certainly have this, you know, social class element to them. And what they're trying to bring in, they're basically trying to clean out the drunks, to bring in a new class of drunks in the sports, hospitality, entertainment district. So, you know, if you've got a tickets to a Jets game and you can afford a, you know, a plate of nachos and a bunch of beer at a more upscale sports bar, things like that, like that's what they want to happen, but they don't want, you know, another class of people. So it's not the issue of we don't want drunks on the street. It's like we don't want a certain type of drunks on the street. If you're from a middle class background, if you're white, and, you know, if you want to come down here and drink all day, then that's okay. But it's, you know, it's other groups, it's more marginal groups that, you know, are the somehow a problem.
I've spoken to some of the downtown security people who say that Jets games are some of the most problematic nights for them working downtown.
That's interesting, yeah.
And then on the other side of that, there's been some projects of that have been seen as pretty pretty positive for some neighborhoods, I think, like the redevelopment of the Merchants Hotel in particular. I've heard a lot of positive things about it from people working in anti-poverty work in the North End and on Selkirk Avenue in particular. Well, there's some other projects where it just seems like they're maybe going to buy up the hotel and shut it down, and they don't have a plan to replace that with. What distinguishes those? What needs to be in place for a redevelopment plan to be successful?
Well, in the example of closing down an old hotel, say the Merchants Hotel or, you know, something like that, you know, first and foremost, it's good to find a place for the people that actually are, you know, tenants of the hotel. You know, if you're going to be closing it down to redevelop it or whatever, you know, make sure that they have a place to go. And also, you know, I think with, you know, the example of the Merchants Hotel and the Bell Hotel on Main Street is kind of another example, although that, you know, took a couple of years for it to, you know, come online. But you know, ultimately, it's a more, you know, a positive development of that. Just keeping in mind that, you know, you're not like you're still going to be like a neighborhood still has that as part of, like that old. You're not just making it disappear. You're not sweeping it under the rug, but. So, you know, I'm not opposed to if someone wants to buy up one of the old, you know, like the St. Regis or something and do something new with it, you know, and change it completely. That's fine. But I mean, I think people, that, want to do development downtown should remember that it's a place where everyone should feel welcome. You know, and where everyone is, you know, from the wealthiest citizens to the poorest citizens in our city, they're all downtown. So, you know, kind of just keeping that in mind as we develop these places.
Now, just one final thing. You said to think small about development. What would be one small thing that we could do here in Winnipeg to make it a better place?
Well, I mean, there's a, you know, like there's a, I think just having a, It's with small things, you know, you can't, I guess you could, you know, I could come up with a specific small plan, but just to, I guess more appreciating the, you know, how things move more slowly and not being disappointed if something isn't a big mega project. So if you want to take a large site of land rather than, you know, we got to put a big skyscraper here, or we got to put Western Canada's biggest arena or, you know, largest sports bar or something like that. If it's just modest housing, that's okay. You know, like, and so things like that. There's all kinds of zoning issues, like reforms with making it more easy to rehabilitate an older building. You know, there's fire codes that you can't really get around, but there's all kinds of other things. And so as city planners at the city, you know, I know they're working hard as it is, but I, you know, just really, trying to be a little bit more creative and, you know, more proactive when it comes to, doing, you know, these kind of small developments.
Well, we'll be, staying tuned to your upcoming articles in the Spectator Tribune on your website, Rise and Sprawl. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Robert Galston, a journalist who writes about urban planning in Winnipeg. His blog, Rise and Sprawl, can be found at riseandsprawl.tumblr.com. You are listening to Mud and Water at CKUW 95.9 FM.